We start this hour by marking an anniversary. Tomorrow will be 2 years since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Outwardly, the country projects confidence in the war's progress, and political repression ensures that is also the message at home. So how could one gauge Russia's mood right now? NPR's Charles Maines found a way, perhaps, in a Moscow theme park.
There are the official stories told about Russia, and then there are the stories Russians tell about themselves. Amid another year of war that saw hundreds of thousands killed and wounded, an armed rebellion in Russia's military ranks, and a crackdown on dissent at home, Russian President Vladimir Putin's message to his nation, Russia is not only surviving, it's thriving.
Страна качественно меняется изнутри.
The country is changing for the better, said Putin at a conference in Moscow this week. We're becoming more self-sufficient and more sovereign, adding it was now Russia's time. A new exhibit in Moscow, called simply Россия, or Russia, celebrates the best of the Putin era at 24 years and counting. Housed on the grounds of a park once dedicated to Soviet achievements in industry and agriculture, the new exhibit features tributes to present-day successes like the Sputnik V vaccine and Russia's new fleet of nuclear-powered icebreakers. There's also a massive pavilion dedicated to Russia's regions. The world's largest country housed in a free-to-the-public wonder cabinet of Siberian robots, stuffed polar bears, and did-you-know trivia on local history and culture. Galina Shabelkova, a pensioner visiting from Siberia, says she likes what she sees. Our Russia has begun to develop in the right way. It's more beautiful, more accessible than ever, says Shabelkova, and that's all thanks to our president. Walking the length of the pavilion offers a vicarious trip across the country, beginning with Ukraine's occupied territories. In a mock-up of a Donetsk coal mine, 22-year-old Anna Chichua tells me the story of her region's journey from oppression under Ukraine to its fight for independence and later reunification with Russia. There's also this. A 6-foot rose sculpted from shrapnel, a symbol of the region's resolve. People often ask if we're happy to be with Russia, Chichua explains. I tell them that when Vladimir Putin recognized Donetsk, everyone had goosebumps. We'd finally gained our freedom.
За нами правда. За нами Россия.
In September of 2022, at a ceremony at the Kremlin, Putin proclaimed Donetsk and three other Ukrainian regions part of the Russian Federation forever. Never mind that to this day, Russian forces don't have full control over the area or that the international community condemned the annexation as illegal. At a booth for the occupied Kherson region, local Alexander Shevchenko says that after watching territory shift hands repeatedly in the first year of the war, he now sees battle lines and hearts more hardened. Many people no longer talk with friends, brothers, sisters, and family who ended up on the other side, he says. But that's only because Ukrainian propaganda makes contact impossible. Shevchenko says most have adapted to life under Russian rule, with its new tax codes, laws, and Russian telephone numbers. It's the latest chapter in the region's long history. Life is always about change, he tells me. Those who aren't ready for change aren't ready for life. Next, our tour reaches Belgorod, a region bordering Ukraine and one of the few regions of Russia under regular attack. Artem Chistikov, a recent university graduate from Belgrade, reminds us it is largely American rockets that have rained down on his city the past year, just as he acknowledges the devastation Russia has meted out on Ukraine. First they hit us, and then we hit them, or the other way around. But there's always a response, he tells me. It's an endless cycle of revenge, and honestly, we're all tired of it. The exhibit is also a chance to swing through Chechnya, a republic renowned for its own past separatist wars and human rights abuses under its current Kremlin-backed leader, Ramzan Kadyrov. Yadiv Rivzan, an official in the republic's agricultural ministry, says Chechen support for the war effort is unwavering, as is their pride in the battlefield achievements of Kadyrov's elite Ahmad special forces in Ukraine. People come from all over the country to train with Ahmad before heading off to Ukraine, he says. That includes former fighters from the Wagner Group. Rivzan told me most Wagner fighters joined Ahmad after Wagner was disbanded following a failed uprising by its leader Yevgeny Prigozhin against Russia's top brass last summer. Prigozhin died in a still unexplained plane crash just 2 months after the rebellion. We end our tour elsewhere in Moscow, but talking about another mysterious death and another form of Russian power. Last weekend, police rounded up hundreds of mourners paying tribute to the late opposition leader Alexei Navalny, the circumstances of whose death last week in a remote Arctic prison remain unclear. 25-year-old Pavel Injutov says with Navalny's death, his belief in a brighter future for Russia has died as well. Who else can so clearly express the feelings of those of us who don't agree with Putin or the war, he says. We've been talking in front of the Solovetsky Stone, a monument to victims of Soviet repression, in a small snow-covered park across from the headquarters of the old KGB. There are the official stories told about Russia, and then there are the stories Russians tell about themselves. It was late, and police looked on blankly, waiting for us to leave. Waiting so they could remove the flowers and tributes to Navalny, as they have done every night since his death, only to see them reappear the next day. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.